Okay, we're beginning at the bottom of Peichet Amud Bet. We're continuing with the sugya from yesterday. Yesterday, at the end of the daf, we discussed that Shmuel's position relied on the Takanas Usha, that Usha iskinu she'aishah she'machra nechnei meluk b'chayiv alal meida abal motzi miyadu kufchot. That was the principle that was established in Usha, that a woman who sells nechnei meluk while her husband is still alive, the husband, if she predeceases the husband, the husband can remove it from the lukuchot after the death of his wife. Now, Amar Avidi Ba'avin, Avana Nami Tanina, we also learned an Abraite, a similar type of idea, but Tanatusha. May Idim Anu Bi'ishploni, Shigirish Adishto, Vanata Anai Ketubata. So Idim come along and testify that this woman had divorced, was divorced from her husband, and she received her Ketubah. Harihi Tachta, but despite the fact that she already received their ksuvah, she's now back together with him, umisham shato, benimtzu zamamim. And then we find out that they were edim zamamim. Einom rim yishamu kol ktubata. So we don't say, go ahead and pay for the entire ksuvah. Ela tovat hanak ktubata. We only ask them to pay the tovat hanak of the ksuvah. Now, what's the Gemara in a second discuss how do you calculate it? What is the tovat hanak of the ksuvah? But what do you see from here? You have Edim who come along and say that this woman was divorced, received her ksuvah, and now they're back together again. So what they're trying to do, basically, is have her lose her ksuvah. Because they're basically saying she was divorced, received her ksuvah, and now that they're back together, she's not really entitled to a ksuvah anymore. So they, Edim Zomimim, who are lying, tried to make her lose her ksuvah. So if that's the case, they should have to pay her a ksuvah in place. Now the Gemara says, no, that's not the case. Ibn Barabin says that's not the case because they didn't necessarily cause her to lose her ksubah. Because there are different possibilities. What are the different possibilities here? One possibility is that her husband dies first. If her husband dies first, then she will receive her ksubah. The other possibility is that she predeceases her husband. If she predeceases her husband inherits her and there is no ksubah. So there's a binary option here. Whether she will receive her ksuvah or not depends on who dies first. So based on that, there's not certainty that they really caused her a loss of her ksuvah. So therefore, they do not pay her ksuvah, but they're either paying her tovat hanav the ksuvah. What's the tovat hanav the ksuvah? The Gemara says, ezu tovat hanav ksuvata. How do you calculate this tovat hanav? Omdim, we assess. Kam adam rotzei litein ksuvah shalzu. Who would buy this option? Who would buy the option to own this woman's ksuvah? If she is widowed or divorced, where she does receive her ksuba, then the buyer will receive that money. But on the other hand, if she predeceases her husband, her husband will inherit her. So there are two factors here in terms of calculating the value of the ksuba. There is the optionality, which is that there's a possibility that she will receive the money, there's a possibility she will not receive the money. So you have to calculate the value of that option, which is basically the actuarial life of the woman and the man, and then you would have to assume which one, or based on that, what's the likelihood of one of them predeceasing the other. And the second is the time value of money, which is that you do not receive the ksubah now, but you only receive it at a later point in time. So whatever you pay today, right, you're going to discount back, the amount of time it will be till you receive the ksubah. And number two is you're going to discount the fact that there's a possibility you may not receive the ksuba at all. And this one possibility is that you will receive it if she is either widowed or divorced. And the other possibility is you will not receive the ksuba at all because she predeceases her husband. So both of those will go into the factors. And therefore you will only pay tovatana. Rashi calls tovatana davar mu'at. I don't know if it would be davar mu'at, but in relationship to the totality of the ksuba, it's much smaller. It's a percentage of the total amount because no one's going to pay for that full ksuba. If you think there is no such thing as a takanat usha, who says her husband is going to ever inherit her? Meaning that, why is it when we're assessing the value of the ksubah, we said the edim only owe her the money for the possibility, meaning the optionality that maybe she'll get her ksubah, number one, and number two is for the time value of money. If it's true, or she's able to sell her ksuvah right now, and the husband has no rights to pull it back, then she really could have realized the full value of her ksuvah immediately. She could have sold it, and it would have remained sold. And that's what they caused her to lose here.
The Edim, these Edim Zomim, who came along and lied and said she was divorced and got her ksuba ready, they left her the ability to sell her ksuba right out of her marriage. So that proves to you that what? There must be a Tekana Susha. If there's a Tekana Susha, that means that the woman's sale will not be final. And if the husband, if she produces her husband can pull it back. And because of that, the woman can never sell the ksuba at full value today, because no one will buy it off of her for fully out for the possibility that the husband later on will come and pull it back. So it must be that there's Tekana Sushas in place. And he says, that's how I know from this price that there is a concept of Tekana Susha. Now, Amar Abaye, Abaye says, you're comparing apples and oranges. Imam Ruben Ifsei Malub, Yom Ruben Ifsei Tona Barzo. Wait a minute, the Tekanas, when it comes to Nifsei Malub, right, when it comes to Nifsei Malug and Nifsei Tona Barzo, what's the difference between Nifsei Malug and Nifsei Tona Barzo? Nifsei Malug, the woman brings in the property or the items into the marriage. The husband has a right of usage. He has the right of the pirot, the output of that property. And then at the end of the period of the marriage, when she would technically get it back, if either she's divorced or widowed, she gets back the Nifsei Malug exactly like they are. Whatever the property came in as, that's how they come out. Now, on the other hand, he has to return her whatever the property is. I mean, that whatever the, if she brought in land, that land will go back to her. On the other hand, we have Nifsei Tona Barzel. Nifsei Tona Barzel are assessed their value at the moment of the marriage, the dowry. At the moment of the marriage, they assess the value, and the husband becomes obligated to pay that value. And the item or the parkour, that all become his. It basically becomes his to do as he pleases with. The only thing he's on the hook for is the monetary value of the item that was brought into the marriage. Therefore, she's widowed or divorced, she has a lien or a right to that amount of money of what the value of the land that was brought in. Now, if they if they go up in value or they go down in value, that's the husband's problem now, because he now obligates himself as a certain value. That's the difference between Tona Barzel and Nifsei Malug. Now, when we talked about Takanas Usha, right, Tekanas Usha only has application by Nifsei Malug. So now, if you could say by Nifsei Malug that she can sell them and the Baal can't remove them from the Kufot, because why? Because she's on the hook for the value of the property. Right, she's on the hook for the value of the property. So why does Imam Nifsei Malug, Yom Nifsei Barzel, who says that by Tona Barzel, that will also be true, because when it comes to Tona Barzel, the Chatan, the husband, takes full achrayut, full responsibility for the item. So maybe one thing by Tona Barzel that you can go and remove it. Who says that that has application by Nifsei Malug?
In other words, even without the Kanazusha, Nifsei Tona Barzel would remain with the husband.
Right, correct.
And fulfill this the requirement for the Tovas Hanah.
Right, exactly. Meaning that you don't need Takanas Usha to teach me about Nifsei Tzon Barzel. Takanas Usha applies to Nifsei Malug, which is what the statement of Shmuel was in Yetzirah, Va'isha Shemach from Nifsei Malug B'chai Ba'alam Eitzon Ba'al Motzi Miyana L'Kukot. And that the Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, Ba'usha Yitkinu, Va'isha Shemach from Nifsei Malug B'chai Ba'alam Eitzon Ba'al Motzi Miyana L'Kukot. So when you're proving to me about this Brisa is talking about, right, the same thing as Takanas Usha, who says that's true? Maybe the Brisa is referencing or talking about the Nifsei Tona Barzel. Talking about Nifsei Tona Barzel, that's why the husband can go and pull them out of the Kuchot, because she really doesn't have any rights in that property anymore. She has rights to the value of the property, but not the property itself. She goes and sells it, she can't pull it back from the Kuchot because it really belongs to the husband. But that doesn't mean by Nifsei Malug the Brisa agrees, and therefore we don't know if the Brisa is supporting the position of Takanas Usha or not. So Omar Abai says, no, Tovat Hanah, Ho'ba'ati Yadan, name of Amilsa. Let's get sidetracked a little bit. Since we're talking about Tovat Hanah, let me tell you over some parts on Tovat Hanah. What's that? So Tovat Hanah, the Isha, name of Amilsa. Tovat Hanah, the Isha, Habio. The Tovat Hanah belongs to the woman. What does that mean? It means that if the woman sells her ksuba for the Tovat Hanah, it belongs to her. The value that she sells belongs to her. If you believe it belongs to the husband, the Edim Sovim, consider, what did we cause you any loss? I mean, why here in this instance the Edim Sovim have to pay her anything? If the sale of the ksuba, the toletana, that value that she realizes that I'm selling her ksuba early, would all go back, go to her husband, or revert to her husband, then the Eidim Zomim actually caused her no loss whatsoever. Because either way, she would have gotten no money. Either way, even if she waited to the, even if she tried to sell it today, she would, any monetary value she would have released out of the ksuba, of that discounted value of selling it today, would all go to her husband. So the woman lost nothing. The woman lost nothing, then why the Eidim Zomim paying? Must be that the woman does receive the Todnerat Hanah. So he says, if you had sold it for the Tovat Hanah, for the present value and the optionality, had you sold it today, right, that money would have gone to your husband. That's not true. Because the woman still benefits. Even if her husband ends up with the money, right, she likes a rich husband. The more money her husband has, the more money she can spend. There's value to her in the monetary utilization of her husband, and the monetary earnings of her husband. So if she could realize the value of Ksuba today, and that's over and out, even though it wouldn't go to her directly, it would go to her husband, she still benefits from the fact that her household, the estate, is a larger estate. And so there is some benefit to her. I think, again, maybe you have to say that that's a diminished value. It may not be the full value of the Ksuba now, but at least there's some value there. And for the Eidim Zomim, we would be on the hook from that. I'm a Rabba, and the Rabba says, Hilchasa, what's halacha? Halacha is, Tawbat Hano li Isha. Tawbat Hano belongs to the woman. Ve'en aval ochel peiros. Not only does Tawbat Hano belong to the woman, but en aval ochel peiros. The Baal does not get any part of that. He does not get any value or the output of that item. So that, in general, we say by a woman, right, that anything that comes to a woman, so what we say to her is to be shomer, the item, we say by karka. And the husband will own the output or the payroll of the item. Over here we say that this money, because it's a ksuba, not only does the karka belong to her, but even the payroll will remain with her. My taima. What's the reasoning for this? Payrot akinu le rabbanan. The rabbanan gave payroll to the husband. Payrot de payre, lo takinu le rabbanan. Right? That's the payroll to payroll. They did not give to the husband, and this is payroll to payroll. Why? Because her selling of the ksuba, that's over there now, is payroll, right? That's the payroll of the ksuba. And now you're going to buy karka with it and then give him payroll? That's payray to payray. That's double, right? It's a double payroll. And so this points out, that's only familiar to Atim Alma. We only say that the husband's not entitled to payray when it comes from outside, from a third party, where she has a windfall from the outside, and that money belongs to her. She buys karka, and the payroll will belong to her. On the other hand, if it's property like the Nechzei Maluk, where she brings into the marriage, and the husband owns the right to the payroll, so for instance, if those payrolls, it's animals, right, and they have babies, then the babies also, those payrolls will also, the husband will belong to the husband, because payroll to payroll in that case do belong to the husband. It's only the principle that remains with the woman. Over here, payroll to payroll is because it came from the outside, you know, the third party presented the money, and therefore the husband doesn't own payroll to payroll. Kiatara Papa, Virabuna Bray, the Rabbi Yeshua, Mibe Rab, Amre, Tanina, the Takana Seusha. We have we have something, a Bryce that tells us about Takana Seusha. Right, they are going to quote a Mishnah, so this is a Mishnah. Eben by Isha, Yatanra, right, this is our Mishnah. And Eben and Isha, they're the Gyazra, Chuba ben Chayav, Behem Shukavu, Behem Turim. Eved and a woman have a bad, are bad as people to interact with. Why? Because if you damage them, you're chayav to pay them. Whereas if they damage you, they are pturim. They don't have to pay. Now, in the Mishnah distinguishes two types of b'kiyatan ra. There's a cher shote and katan, and then there's isha and eved. The cher shote and katan, b'kiyatan ra, is because if you do damage them, you must compensate. If they do damage you, they are pturim the gamre. They're not bar chiyuva. They have no chiyuv. They're patur the gamre. That's why the b'giyat danra. On the other hand, by Eve and Isha, when you damage them, you're chayav. When they damage you, they really are chayav. But it's not within their purview or within their ability to pay you. So they're paturim, and not because they're not chayav to pay, not because it's not a chuvah to pay, but rather because it's not within their ability to raise the funds to pay you. But what are the implications of that? The implications of that, if later on they do get or come into possession of the funds, they will have to pay you. For instance, if the woman's divorced or widow later on, and then she has money, she must pay up the money. And evidence is shtachrer. that Reed will be obligated to pay the money that he did when he was an Evan. So there was a chuppa, they were just unable to pay. Now the Gemara says, I can prove to you that there is a Takana Susha. Why? Because our Mishnah says that the woman can't pay for the damage that she does. Why not? Right? The Isaka Daska led to the Takana Susha. If there is no Takana Susha, that's been Nifsei Maluk. Let her sell the Nifsei Maluk with Titain Leif. Right? So then she can pay him off. Let her sell her Ksuba right now. She'll sell the Ksuba right now. Now she has money. That's her money. And then she'll pay for it. Samara says, Lutameh. Nihi. Now I need to eat the Takana Susha. Well, let's say even if there is a Takana Susha. Below Matsi Mizabna Lagamri. Nevertheless, okay. When it comes to Takana Susha, what does Takana Susha say? If she predeceases her husband inherits her, he can go and pull it out of the Kukot. But there's still a possibility that she will be widowed or divorced. If she's widowed or divorced, then what? Then she gets the ksuba. So she could still sell her ksuba. It would be for a lesser amount, because again, now there's an option. In the case where she can sell it, there's no Takana Susha, she can sell the ksuba, and she's certain she's going to make the sale. The sale's good. So the only question is, when's the ksuba going to get paid out? So then there's only a discount, a small discount for the time value of money, for the amount of time until he receives the ksuba, the person who buys it. On the other hand, if there's a Takana Susha of optionality, which is implied with it, she will not receive the ksuba at all, and the kukot will lose the ksuba. But there's still the other side, which is that she will receive the ksuba. So, okay, she can't sell the ksuba for its full value, but she can sell it at a discounted amount, which accounts for the options and the optionality and the time value. So let's say the same thing. So what do you say? So in he now with equal time susha, low must be zabna the gamre, she's out of the next thing with over sign off, it's eating like right, so much she could sell the ksuba at a discounted value, and that value she could use to pay for the damage. Ella the Lesla. Must be that she doesn't have that. Akanami the Lesla, must be that she doesn't have it. So either way, you can't prove anything from here about Tana Susha. Because we have to set up the case in the case where she doesn't have the value of the subar, the tabakana, nothing is going to reach the value of the damage. If this is one reach the value of the damage, don't force her to sell it, because she can't pay for the damage anyway.
So they just set up an ukimta, that the case that they were talking about?
Must be a case that it doesn't reach the value. Not that she doesn't have a subar at all, necessarily, but that she doesn't, the value of the subar won't reach the amount of the chavala. Even if she sells the ksuba, that money won't be sufficient to cover the loss of the the damage that she created. So there's no reason for it to sell. She's still going to own the money.
Sell it for, so she's still tired to give whatever she can give.
Okay. But this being ksuba tab is tovah dana, but it's damage. Right. So that the Gemara says, all right. And Okanami, it doesn't reach the full value, but right, let her sell it for whatever she can get. At least pay him, and she'll owe the rest when she finishes up. Hamani, Rabbi Meir, he. This is the author of this, right? Or this Mishnah must be Rabbi Meir. The Amar, Sur Adam, Sto Afil Shachat Velo Ksuba. That a person is not unable, it is not a sur for a man to live with his wife if she doesn't have a ksuba. If she sells her ksuba, she no longer has a ksuba. So if she doesn't have a ksuba, they can't live together anymore. So the reason she can't sell her ksuba over here is not because of the question of Takana Susha or the value. It all has to do with one factor, which is that if she sells the ksuba, she no longer has a ksuba. If she no longer has a ksuba, she can't be married. Mar says, wait a minute. Why? But time am I. What's the reasoning that a person, right, has a ksuba? Today she will take kala b'inav l'hotsiya. The reason, what's the point of having a ksuba? Ksuba is a disincentive for the husband to divorce his wife because there are monetary implications. I mean that there are shlachot. There are real implications to going to getting divorced. Not willy-nilly divorced when they take it back, divorce her. But he divorces her, now he's also been obligated on monetary, right, obligations that come from the ksuba. The ksuba is a disincentive. Now, when the woman sells the ksuba, right, what is happening? The husband still has to pay out the ksuba if he damages her. If he divorces her, he still has to pay out the ksuba. He just doesn't pay it to her, he pays it to the kukot. So the disincentive is still in place. Either way, he's going to have to pay the ksuba. Whether he pays the ksuba to the wife, or he pays the ksuba to the kukot, for him, it should be no different. The same disincentive exists, that there's a monetary obligation that's going to be generated by his divorce. That's what it says. He's not going to divorce her here in this case either if she sells her ksuba. If he divorces her, the guys who bought it are going to show up to claim their option. They bought their option, they come exercise their option, say, alright, we're ready to collect the ksuba. Either way, he's going to have to pay out the money. Ella tova tana mile ninu. Umile lo mishtabde. So I'm trying another answer. What's the reason she doesn't have to sell her ksuba to pay for the damage? It's because tova tana are intangible items. If they're intangible items are not mishubad to the nizak. The nizak was damaged, and he can't go and collect out of the ksuba because the tova tana, the ksuba right now is worthless. It's only worth, in terms of its real value, it's only worth the discounted value and the optionality value that it will create. That is an intangible item. An intangible item does not belong to nizak. Okay. Just because it's intangible, so he doesn't have a shibud on it, but nevertheless, she could still realize the value and pay him. Why don't we tell her, go sell it, get the value and pay him? You're right, it's not a shibud, just to still pay him. Alam alo. Right? So what do you mean? Why not? Why shouldn't you pay him out of Mile, the nizak may be the darn you. They're intangible items. But intangible items that can realize monetary value. If the intangible item can be sold and realize monetary value, great. Let's do that. Take the intangible item, right? Sell it so that you realize the value and then pay for the damage. So Mara says, though, Ella Mishum de Shmuel. The problem here is Shmuel. What's the problem that Shmuel raises here? The Zamar Shmuel Mukher Shtarchov, someone who sells a debt obligation, Bechabero, Bechazar, Machlo, Machul. So we learned this. We had this together with Mark Kedushin and Subos. That the Shmuel says that if a person, a creditor, goes ahead and sells a shtarchol, he sells the loan to another party. When he sells the loan to the other party, he has the residual right to forgive the loan. Maybe he can sell it. And even after he sold the loan and there's a new creditor, he can still forgive the loan because all he sold was the ability to collect, right? The guvaina, the ability to go collect on the debtor. But what he did not sell, or he doesn't have the ability to get away, maybe the shibud of the gufa, the shibud that belongs to the debtor to the creditor, and that he can be mochel, that he can remove, he can forgive that item, and therefore the debtor will no longer be obligated to pay the other creditor because the original creditor forgave him. Where it says, Imrei, Bunei Zabin, Mitzitainle. So they say, no. You know what you'll do? Sell it. Sell the ksuba. And then you'll pay the nizak. What does the nizak care? Nizak doesn't care. You'll sell it to the kuchot. She'll get the money. And she'll pay the guy that she damaged. Now, if she goes and forgives the sale, meaning she goes and forgives her husband for having to pay the ksuba, the nizak doesn't lose out. He got his money. The only one who loses out is the buyer. And if she forgives the husband from paying the ksuba, okay, who cares? So it says, Imre, call the gabe baal, vaday maklele. Wait a minute, no. When it comes to a husband, she for sure is going to forgive it. It's not like she might forgive it. She for sure will forgive it. Vasadine, but how is Zina? So it says, what do you mean? Just because she's married, she's going to go and forgive this loan, and she's going to cause this loss to the buyers. Here you have a number of parties. Here you have the buyers of her ksuba, you have the nizak, the person she damaged, and you have her husband. So now what does she do? She says, as she damaged this nizak, she's got to pay him. So she sells her ksuba for the tova tana, and with that money she pays off the nizak. So everything's fine with the nizak, he's happy, he's got his money. Now the kuchot are never going to buy such an item. Why are they not going to buy such an item? Because a woman will always forgive her husband's debt when they're still married, because she's still married to him, she's going to go ahead and forgive the debt. She forgives the debt, but the kuchot get nothing. So the kuchot know that up front, or they think that up front, they're never going to pay anything for the ksuba. So Mara says, wait a minute, will she really forgive this ksuba? She sold it to the kuchot. She's such an evil person that she's going to go ahead and forgive the loan after she sold it, be koser mut, right? Be lacking, being moral or have ethics. She sells the thing and then goes and forgives it. I said, yes, why? She's not via Zayim causing the loss. It's an indirect loss. It's a very big psychological idea. Right? It's different things with feeling, right? When you're talking about
white
feeling,
collar,
right, exactly. There are two things that make it easier for people to steal. One is if it's an institution rather than an individual. Right? They don't feel like they're stealing from somebody. They're stealing from, they can justify stealing from a big institution or the government. That's one thing that helps them. And the second that helps them is what? It's not a after deal be a dime. I really didn't cause that the loss. Right? I did something, because that's something also they lost out. But I didn't actively, I didn't go damage their property. I didn't go and steal something from their house. It's a white collar crime, meaning that, yeah, I took something, but it wasn't like the real stealing. It's a different type of stealing. So people justify that action, right? By doing that, where they cause tremendous pain to others. So both of those, from a psychological standpoint, people who do them, even though they're wrong, nevertheless they can justify them, because of that, we're afraid she will go and forgive the loan. So where I said, we have a better idea. What? What's the better idea? Zina nihale. Pay off the nizak with the ksuba. Sell the ksuba to the nizak himself, to the one who got damaged. Why? That was the chabla, baby, to watana. She will give the ksuba to, will assess the value of the ksuba to watana today, meaning again, the time value money plus the option value, and then we'll give that to the nizak. Now why? What's going to happen? The makla, the gabe baba. So what's the problem here? She's going to forgive the husband from paying the loan again, and then the nizak got nothing. Lo kamaftis. Then the nizak doesn't get anything. Why? That's not lo mitei kayovitlei. Because if she forgives the loan, that means she never paid the nizak. Right? She never paid the nizak. She owes the nizak money. If she goes ahead and forgives the loan, she never paid the nizak. So there's nothing to talk about. So, kol gabei baal vadei machlo. Now in the end, we know for certain she's going to forgive it. Okay, so what? For certain she's going to forgive it, she'll have to pay him. No, to put Beis Din out for no reason, we're not going to do. Because Beis Din now is going to have to assess the value of the tzuba, of the tzuba, ensure that it goes to the nizak. And then we know she's going to forgive it anyway. It's going to be worthless, so she's going to have to pay in the end anyway. So we don't obligate, or we don't pressure, or we don't force Beis Din to interact or to have to deal with such a situation when we know what the outcome is. The outcome is always going to be a big zero. The outcome is always going to be a big zero. We don't tell Beis Din to get involved in this case. We just say, forget it. Pay when things are over. Right. Now.
So in the end.
In the end. Okay.
What
so
was
in
the
end,
progression here? What was the.
Right. So in the end, we started out with, say, we have a proof from a Mishnah that there must be a Satana Zusha. Because if there wasn't a Satana Zusha, right, then. Then how could the woman, if there wasn't a Satana Zusha, the woman could sell her ksuba. If she could sell her ksuba, then she should be able to pay back, right, the individual right now. The Gemara says, wait a minute, even if there is a Satana Zusha,
then her Kabbalata shouldn't be Ra.
Right. It should never be Kiyatan Ra. Kiyatan Ra, because she could pay off right now. She could sell her ksuba and pay it off. The Gemara says, little secret. Even if there is a Satana Zusha, she could sell her ksuba for Tovasana. She could sell her ksuba for Tovasana. Then you can't prove to me either way. It has nothing to do with Takana Zusha. Either way, she could realize value for Ksuba. She could realize value either because there is no Takana Zusha, or she could realize value because there is a Takana Zusha. Depends what the value will be, but there is a value of Ksuba. So then Gemara tried to say, okay, so you know what the problem here is? You can't live without a Ksuba. Gemara says, wait, the reason you can't live without a Ksuba is because it's disincentive. That's disincentive because it's dead when she sells it. That can't be the reason. So Gemara answers, no, she can't sell her Ksuba. Because nobody's going to buy it from her. Why is nobody going to buy the ksuba from her? Because she can mokel it from underneath you. If she can mokel from underneath you, there's no value to the ksuba. So Martha says, okay, she's selling it to a third party, give it to the nizak. Right, you want to shuck either to zero and she'll own the money. If it's good, then you've got to get his money. So Martha says, no, because for sure she's going to forgive it, right, then we don't have much of a basis for it. So all in the end, we ended up with, all right, we explained why she can't sell her ksuba and forget that wrong. But it has nothing to do with the Kanasusha. So there's no proof here that the Mishnah is dealing with the Kanasusha. On the other hand, why doesn't the woman pay? The woman doesn't pay because there's nothing to sell here. There's no value to realize over here. Because either she's going to sell it and the Kufa is going to say no way because you're going to forgive it. Or the Nizak, you'll give it to him, but then Beis Din will be out the time and investment in dealing with her because she's going to forgive it anyway. So that can be. Ella. You know what? There's an interesting Tosfos over here. Tosa says, why doesn't she sell the ksuba back to her husband? Right, Tosa has a very nice question. What?
Then the answer is more, they can't leave your wife with
ksuba. No, but we said before that it's a, right, it has to be a disincentive.
Right, so if you sell back to him, then that's it. So then he has nothing to pay, so then
Well, he has to sell. So, Imtomar, Tosa says, in the Baal Gufe, right, the pay save lay, then after the Nechbal. They sell it back to the husband himself, and then pay it out to the. Right, pay it out to the next Baba Yishlomar. Shabbala Yerzelik, no. Shabbala Yerzelik, Tidishto. That's one. Right? Or, like you just said, as you just said, Inami, Mukmei Lava Soma for Rabbi Meir. Dhamma shows the Mishtobu Tuba Asur. Right? So those are the two possibilities. One is that the Baal doesn't want to cause his wife a loss. What's the loss? The differential between what he pays today, the present value of the Ksuba today and the optionality versus what the long range value of the Ksuba will be. Right? So that, either that, or, like Rabbi Meir. Bim Tomer, Beheyaki Chol Alim Chol. What gave her the right to be Mokhel? Because Tosus brings the proof over here that the woman is not allowed to be Mokhel the Ksuba. Tosus says, okay, maybe she's not allowed to give the Ksuba when she's still married, but what they could do is create a Knunya. They could have aid and abet each other in doing the crime, which is that he could divorce her, pretend to divorce her, then she can forgive the Ksuba in the divorce, and then they'll remarry again. So that there's a way to create a situation where she could be mochel. According to Tosfos, even when you can't be mochel while she's still married, even they could pretend, they could feign the divorce, then she could forgive the loan, and then they could get married again. They could create a kenunya, right? They could do some sort of harama, right?
Then
she can marry the money.
She's out 100 zoos.
Well, she's okay with that again because this was her husband, so she wanted to help her husband out. She sold the ksuba already. She realized the value of the ksuba. Now she forgives the husband, so the husband's not out any money. So that's the one case. The one last suggestion that Tosfos over here is, what about the sack you've been selling, the mamat shloshtan? We had this concept in the Gemara in Kedushin and other places, that you're able to sell a document, or you're allowed to sell a loan, you can pass on a creditor's loan, the mamat shloshtan. And by mamat shloshtan, you're not allowed to forgive. Can't forgive it. It's a mila by mamat shloshtan. It doesn't work by a mamat shloshtan. That's what the Tosfos over here brings this question. Zeik sher rabbi shmuel bar chaim has been to a tab of mamat shloshtan. Then you chalal lipchol. She can't forgive it anymore. Moshe rabbeil read the duct tape. Reproves it all over. So she'll sell it to mamat shloshtan. She can't forgive it. And now we have a great sale. We have a way to realize the value of the ksuba. The disincentive is still there because the husband's going to have to pay out the ksuba to the third party. Right? Number two is she can't forgive it. So now you have a realized value, look, the Lukuchim will buy it, and she should be able to collect the value and pass it out. So the Reed, if you look at the bottom of the Tosfos on page 10, he says, listen, the Teretz Reed, the Mamad Shloshtam Einu Molil B'Ktuba Boda Tachat Bala. That Mamad Shloshtam does not work when she is still married. Right? Kevin da Dayin Lo Nitno the Gavot, because it's not collectible. You can only sell a credit that you have. When you're a creditor, and you have a credit, which means that you have the ability to collect this item, that you can sell with Mamad Shloshtam. What was the point of Mamad Shloshtam? It was Takanat HaShuk, right, to help people out so that they could transact. How did they transact? Because I have credit, and I can pass that credit on, but I can buy on credit, and I can move it around. So that was the Takanat HaShuk. That only applies if someone actually owes you money. Right, but over here by the Ktuba is closer to divine right now. You have no ability to collect. The woman doesn't have the ability to collect now, so she can't sell it with Mamad Shloshtam. She doesn't have to sell any contract. The Mamad Shloshtam.
You can't sell a warrant or future option is the Mamad Shloshtam.
Right. That seems like if the obligation doesn't exist today, correct, right. I mean, if the only obligation won't be generated in the future. There, but I've got just some interesting ideas here. Why not sell it back to the Baal? Right? Why not do it with Mamad Shloshtam? And the last thing is she really able to forgive it? How do we get around the fact that maybe she can't forgive it while she's with her husband? So we said Knunya. Just three little points that those made. All right, now top of Amud Bet there. Elohad Tanya, what about this bride? Bechem he shekavla bebala. She damages her husband. Lo yisida ksubata. She doesn't lose her ksuba. Am I? Why not? Tad vini naani alei. She'll sell it. Sell the ksuba lebala. The tovat anav. Right? She'll sell the ksuba to her husband with the value of the tovat anav ha'kavola. Of that kavalah, di machla the gabei baal like a potato. If she forgives the husband, there's no loss here. Why? Because who's he paying? He's paying himself. If he's paying himself, right, meaning that when she sells the ksuba to the husband's paying out the ksuba to himself now. When he pays out the ksuba to himself, there's no loss here. So she can go ahead and forgive it. Doesn't do anything. Now once she forgives it, there's no loss here. So why is it that when she damages her husband, we don't force her to sell the ksuba? We said the only problem with selling the ksuba was either if she sold it to a third party, she'll forgive it. Or if she sells it to give it to Nizaka Tmo, right, then they're worried she's going to forgive it and it'll be a waste of base and time. Over here, we have neither of those mitigations or mitigating factors. Why? Because if she sells it to the husband, we don't care if she forgives it. Because it's the husband who's paying out.
So why can't she just take that? He does it in the ksuba. Yeah, that's the whole thing.
Alright, so the Gemara is going to answer your question. Right. Alright, the Gemara is exactly asking. There is a difference. There is a difference here.
It's not money yet.
Alright, so there's a difference. There's a difference between the Tovah Tana today and the full value of the Ksuba later on. So that's what the Gemara is going to ask, something similar to yours.
Maybe he has a lien on the Ksuba when he pays it out, but not.
Right, the Gemara is going to answer here. Look at this. The Gemara says, how about Rabbi Meir? But Meir must be the author of this part of this price. So, why? The time am I? Why can't you live with your wife without a ksuba? They shall take kalavein up, so they won't be easy for him to divorce her. Right? Now, over here, right, what is he going to do? He's going to divorce her. Then he's going to take what? He's going to collect from the ksuba the divorce money that they own for the chavalah. So Mar says, "Yoch, Ashkenami, begarish love, begavalei, bechavalei mina." That's over here also. Mar says, "Okay, what are you saying? You're saying sell it to the husband, right? Sell it to the husband. If he sells it to the husband, but the tovah tanah, then what's going to happen? We're going to. What are the options here, right? But Meir said you can't live with your wife without a ksuba. She just sold her ksuba. Now, what's the disincentive for the husband to go ahead and divorce his wife? Why?" Because now he got the money for the chavalah. Doesn't cost him anything to divorce her. Right. And so he'll divorce her because the money's all his now. Somebody says, now what is he going to do? He's going to divorce her and he gets his money back because he damaged her. That was the Tovah Anah that he bought. Tovah Anah was the right to Ksuba later on. That's what Tovah Anah means. I pay you today for your future rights in the Ksuba. So he's lost his incentive. Mar says, okay, hey, listen to me, buddy. Even if he doesn't buy the ksuba, you have the same situation. Ashtanami, Megarshla, Pagavila, Bechavlaimina. All right, fine. She doesn't sell the ksuba to her husband. She gets divorced now. She goes out and collects her ksuba from her husband. Her husband says, pay me back. What's the disincentive again for the husband? The husband is going to get his money back either way. Whether she sells him the ksuba up front, or she does not sell him the ksuba up front, the payment is going to come out of the ksuba. So the husband has lost his disincentive from divorcing her once she owes him money. Once she owes him money, the divorce costs him nothing anymore. Because as soon as he divorces her, he gets his money back, right? And there's no disincentive. Oh, very good. That's the next question, right? That's a big assumption. Right? The big assumption there is you're saying that the ksuba is not in excess of the damage. Maybe the damage is just a small portion of the ksuba, and it's still a big disincentive for him to divorce her. That's exactly right. What Shaul says is exactly right. So I said, Mishum Ha'uporta, I'm sorry, Kigol, the Nafish Ksubata. She has a very big ksuba. Mishum Da'uporta, Lo Masi Tuba. Right? That if it's such a big ksuba, he's not going to be willing to divorce her just to get the payment out of the chavalah. Right, because he owes her, the other 95% of ksuba is going to cost him a lot. Mar says, wait a minute. Enafish ksubata, if ksuba is worth so much, right, miksuba doraisa, above that which is the ksuba doraisa, nukma aksuba doraisa, v'izak tizabna niyalei b'chablei. Mar is asking basically a question that, just from a financial standpoint, which is, if your ksuba in the future is worth a lot, that means it's also worth more today. Tola tada is the present value of the option of getting the ksuba. The more the ksuba is worth in the end, the more the option is worth up front. So if you think that the ksuba is worth so much in the end, it's also worth a lot today. If it's worth a lot today, what we can do is we can bifurcate the ksuba. Ksuba is made up of different components. Ksuba is made up of the core ksuba doraisa, which is the matayim that for a ksula or a monet for a almanah. That is owed to them. That's the core ksuba. Then in excess, that there's what's called tosefes ksuba. Anything in excess of that, that was there anything that tosefes ksuba, anything that he adds on afterwards. Now, if she has a very large ksuba, that means that her ksuba exceeds the ksuba d'oraisa, or exceeds the ksuba de rabbanan. If that's the case, what we can do is sell the portion of the ksuba, the tosefes ksuba, and leave her with the core ksuba. Because if her ksuba is worth so much in the back end, that means that it's in excess of the normal ksuba. If it's in excess of the normal ksuba, we'll separate it. She'll keep the core ksuba, and she'll sell the tovah tanah, right, the portion of the ksuba that's in excess of the oraisa. Now we solved all the problems. Why? There is no disincentive. She has a court ksuba midoraita, or if you assume it's very interesting, it's alright, so whatever. Fact that is, right, that yeah, she has a ksuba, it's cause of a mayor's disincentive to divorce her. On the other hand, she can realize value today by selling out the equal sense to buy and pay her husband or pay whomever it is that she damaged. Okay, the other party she can't do because of the forgiveness issue. But with her husband, we don't worry about forgiveness. So let her sell it and pay her husband off right now.
I have two questions. First of all, so you're showing the ksuba daraisa. Why can't we say the same thing? Sell half of it for Torah and not half of keep as.
No, because that's the assumption is that you need a court.
That's the minimum.
That's the minimum. That is the disincentive. That's the court ksuba. That's not called ksuba if you do it. Tosa says it's not all about a disincentive. The Gemara there gives a different reason for Rabbi Meir. The Gilgamesh Shas, Rekiva Eger points out, you should look in ksuba that there's another reason for Rabbi Meir. Tosa's over here on the first Talmud says, that he says, Tema, the Bereshi Akopi, Mashmi Galav, Hainu Time with the Rabbi Meir. This isn't the real reason of Rabbi Meir. It has nothing to do with it. It has to do with Bilag Nush. There's a whole different reason over there. That's Bilag Nush because she's not Somech, that's her. If you remember from the Gemara, we learned this together, that she will not marry based on the fact of less than a amount because she's not Somech, that's her. She's not Somech, that's her. It becomes a Bilag Nush. That's why Rabbi Meir says you can't be Mishai Yisha, but look to Batah because she's not Somech, that's her. So it has nothing to do with this disincentive to the divorce. So those are still trying to deal with why over here does the Gemara give a different reason, right? Or right, what's the alternative or why is it not involved here? So I'm getting, if you deal with Rabbi Meir, the Shita Tov, you've got to start dealing with a much greater purview of issues. So I don't want to get deep down into that, but those might address some of your issues. All right. So the Gemara says, keep going, all right, what's the case here? The Lord of Yafisha, Ktuba Tav, Ktuba Dor Raisa. No, her Ktuba is not in excess of the Ktuba Dor Raisa. The damage was 4 zuz. For 4 zuz, she's not going to lose 25 tzla'im over here. 25 tzla'im is, a tzela is worth 4 zuz. So 4 times 25 is 100 zuz. Which the, obviously the good, that's the ksuba, but is of an almana. A ksuba b'sula would be 200 zuz. Rashi says that they just used the tchuta b'ktubos. As an example, they just gave the least amount of ksuba. So husband's not going to be willing to divorce the woman for 100 zuz, they have to pay off 4 zuz. So that's how we solve the problem here. So we solve the problem here, this bright is talking about a case, v'chein hi, shechavla b'balo lei sita ksuba. When is it she's not master of ksuba ta? In a case where her ksuba doesn't exceed the ksuba d'oraita. And therefore, what? We say that she's going to be, there is a disincentive for the husband to divorce her because the ksuba is worth so much more, right, than the actual damage that is done. You can't sell the ksuba to her husband because then she'll be without a ksuba because then you're starting to reduce the disincentive. Now you've reduced or got rid of the disincentive. Her ksuba is not worth so much, right, that it's bogeya in that her tovah zanah is worth enough to exceed the, you can have a cork ksuba plus the tovah zanah. So therefore, she can't sell it to the husband. And number two is, there is disincentive for the husband to divorce her because he's not just going to willy-nilly divorce her if it's just going to get 4 zuz out of the 100 zuz or the 200. Alright, El Hadatanya, what about this braisa? Kishem shalo timkor vihi taktav. Kolokach lo tafti vihi taktav. Just like, the way Rashi reads this is, just like she can't sell her ksuba when she's still married to him. I mean, that's the tzkanas usha. Right, then, vihi taktav, kach lo tafti vihi taktav. She also does not lose her ksuba because of a chavala while she's still under him. I mean, just like she can't sell her ksuba, so too she will not lose her ksuba for chavala that she does to her husband. There are times where, according to Rashi, that she does lose her ksuba. We just established there are times where she'll lose her ksuba. If the ksuba is so much in excess of the ksuba d'oraisa, we say she can bifurcate the ksuba. One part will leave intact, which is the ksuba d'oraisa, and she can sell forward, she can sell the option on the other half of the ksuba, and realize that money and then pay her husband out. So there is an instance where she'll lose a part of the ksuba. She can lose a part of the ksuba when she damages her husband. When her ksuba is so much in excess of the ksuba d'oraisa. Says Amarova, no. That's not the way to explain this price. This price is say ba'atah ktubat b'din dichrin. That's talking about a ktubat b'din dichrin. What is a ktubat b'din dichrin? So another takanas chachamim. Takanas chachamim. The way it works, ikar hadin, is that when a wife passes away, the husband inherits the wife. So the husband inherits the wife. The husband has multiple children, and he might have children from many wives. So what ends up happening is, you have a father who's marrying off his daughter. And if the father is marrying off his daughter, he's saying, alright, I'm going to give money to my daughter, I'm giving a dowry to my daughter. If I give the dowry to my daughter, there are two possibilities here. One possibility is that her husband predeceases her, and she'll get her ksuba, and she'll get the money back. The other possibility is, my daughter will predecease her husband, and all the money will go to the husband. When the money goes to all the husband, there's a shot that a lot of this money may go to the people that are not my grandchildren. Because now the husband might have multiple wives, many children, and now they all get split evenly. So Chachamim created something called Ketubat Benin Dichrin, which is that even if the wife predeceases the husband, and the husband inherits the wife, the money, when he passes away, when the Yorshim comes to divide it up, the Banim, the children of that mother, get priority on the value of their mother's ksuba. So before they divide up the property equally, they will each go and collect their ksuba of their mothers, assuming that their mothers have died, or if one of them is still alive, then it won't matter.
No, children, it's something that doesn't have to even be written
ksuba, right? Right, it's one of the Tanai ksuba, correct. It's one of the Tanai ksuba. But it's the kind of Chachamim of Benin Dichrin. That Benin Dichrin, Tanai Benin Dichrin, that your male sons will inherit the ksuba even if you predecease me. So now there's an incentive for the father to give the money to his daughter as a dowry. Because either way, if the husband predeceases her, she'll get it. If she predeceases the husband, it'll go to the husband, but it'll be protected only for his grandchildren. It'll only go to his grandchildren, because when they come to be Yoresh, they'll take out that value and give it to those children first, the children of that woman. So that's what it's talking about here. So Amar Rav, Seif Atam, Ketubat Benin Dichrin, Rav Ketani. Kishem Sham Mocheret Ketubat Ala Achirim. Just like someone who sells her ksuba to a third party, lo hitzida ksubadat bin din dichrin, does not lose out on the ksubadat bin dichrin, my daima, zuzehul dan tsua. It's all because of the money. She sold it because she was under pressure. Kach, mocher ksubadat balado hitzida ksubadat bin din dichrin, my daima, zuzehul dan tsua. She's under my pressure. So, how did she sell it? She sells it. It's a price who shows. So, how did she sell it? There are two possible outcomes. She's selling the option. When she sells it, there's an option. If the husband dies first, then they'll keep the ksuba, the buyers. If she predeceases the husband will pull it back. That's the Zanzusha. When he pulls it back, then now the husband has the money. When the husband has the money, he still has to pay out the ksuba bin Dichrin. Her children still get priority on that money. You would have thought, when she sells the ksuba, she sells everything. She sells the rights of the ksuba bin Dichrin also. And she sells all that out. You say, no, we separate out those items. Sold the ksuba because she was under pressure. She needed the money, and she was under pressure. That's why she sold the ksuba. Her rights, in terms of the ksuba and the ikhrin, that she wasn't willing to sell, that she did not sell, and those remain in place. So too, when she sells to her husband, when she has to pay for a kabbalah to her husband, right? If it's in excess of the ksuba, the rights, and she's able to sell it to pay for her husband's kabbalah that she did to her husband, then, she does not lose the ksuba to the ikhrin on the total value of her ksuba, and her children will inherit the total value of the
expense.
Yeah,
they have to
turn their
also, right? So it's
a
case where she's not
done either. That's what she said. It has to be a, that excess. It has to be a large
super. The Mishnah makes the definitive statement.
No, Bryce makes the definitive statement that she'll never lose her ksuba.
Right, you know what?
That's not true. You can't make that statement. It's not a definitive statement. What you can make as a definitive statement is she will never lose her ksuba. Right. That you can make as a definitive statement. It doesn't matter what the case is or what she sold, that's a definitive statement.
If the husband predeceases her,
yeah.
Then the calf keeps it.
Right, but she hasn't lost her right to the ksuba to the nichrin. It's not in effect then. She never lost her ksuba to the nichrin.
She's entitled
to
ksuba.
She's entitled to ksuba.
The nichrin is, the father was allocating the nidunya, whatever. He wanted to know that it eventually...
And it's what his daughter did, realize the value. She sold it, and she got the value. My father said, either my daughter gets it, or my grandchildren get it. It's not one of those two. It's not you, my son-in-law, and the other kids that are going to get it. I should tell you that Tosfos explains the price differently. Entirely different. That's what Rashi explained. The Reed says no, that he thinks the question of what the price of the Hakami of the Gemara is, that the question is like this. That Gemara thinks that just like she does not sell it to a third party, when she damages someone else, right? That the statement of the price is like this. Just like she doesn't sell her ksuba when it comes to damage to a third party, also when she damages her husband, she doesn't sell it to her husband. Gemara says you can't make a definitive statement like that. Why? Because if there's excess ksuba, she does sell it to her husband. So the solution again is, right, the solution again is about ksubat bedin different. So this is a question about what the havamina of the Gemara is. Rashi says the havamina is, right, that we're never pogim b'ksubata, and she never loses her ksubat. The reason says no. The concept here is just like she never sells her ksubat to pay a third party or to a third party, so too she never sells her ksubat to her husband. I said that's not true. She can't sell her ksuba to her husband when nafish chavala. And there is a lot of nafish ksuba ta, when her ksuba is excessive. So that's the Gemara answers up. In both cases, we're talking about ksuba bin indifferent, both according to Rashi and Tosfos, because that is a definitive statement. She never loses her ksuba bin indifferent. Right? Let us say that the kansusha is a machokas tanai. The tani chada if they after the log you'll see the shame ve'ayin isha v'loish. Then he'd ask another braisa, lo ish, velo isha. So again, we explain, nitzvei mamluk, the principal belongs to the woman, and the peirot belong to whom? The husband. So over here, what do you have? You have an eved, eved kinani, that was brought in as nitzvei mamluk. So the eved kinani belongs to the woman. On the other hand, the output of this eved belongs to the husband. So one braisa said, avdei mamluk yotzin b'shem v'ayin l'isha. If the woman knocks out an Irish chain, it goes free, the eved goes free. Avalodish, but not to the husband. On the other hand, Danida Kodish, Vlodisha. Neither the man nor the woman will set him free. So why Sabrua? So we're gonna think like this. The husband has no rights here because all he has is a Kenyan payroll. He has a Kenyan payroll, Kenyan payroll is Lav Kikinyan Guf. Since he only has a leasehold or a usage right on his eved, he has no right. So he has no principal right. So if the husband knocks out the eye of the chain, nothing to talk about. Right now, my love, this is their argument. The man damar isha let lay takana dusha. The one who says the woman knocks out the shane in the ayin, he doesn't have a takana dusha. So since he doesn't have a takana dusha, no matter what, the woman could sell this eved right now. She has rights to go and sell this eved knani from under her husband because there's no takana dusha, and the husband will never get it back. So the fact that she can sell it out makes it that she has real ownership over the eved knani. If she has real ownership, then you have the eved knani. But she punches out his eye or knocks out his tooth, the husband's going to go free. Umadamar lo leish v'lo leisha. The bride that says neither the husband or the wife will knock out the tooth of the eye in. Right? Then there is no setting them free. If they the kanas usha, then he holds off the kanas usha. So because of the kanas usha, right? Then she can't sell the eved. Why can't she sell the eved? Because the husband can take the eved back in the end. That means when she knocks out the tooth or the eye in. Right. That she doesn't have enough ownership to set him free because maybe it really belongs to the husband. Right? So that's not...
Unless they both function together.
Right. She doesn't own the full principle of the husband.
It doesn't belong to the husband either.
Right. It belongs to neither the husband nor the wife.
Yeah.
So they both have insufficient ownership. Well, the kuliyama ispuhu takana susha. No. Everybody holds the takana susha. Can't call them takana. Come on, takana. No, one of the brides was written before Takana Susha. One was written after Takana Susha. Right, so that's the easy way. Vibai Zayim, unless you didn't like that answer. Idi Vide Laka Takana. They're both after Takana. Vi'itlahu Takana Susha, and everybody holds the Takana Susha. Amanda Amar, the Isha below the Ish, my time off. The one who says that, but the Isha below the Ish, that the woman can do it and not the man, my time off, because of Rabbi's principle. The Amar Rabba, what does Rabbi say? Ha, Hektesh. Chamed v'shichur mafkim midei shibud. Good in Yonah Yoma. There are three things that remove a shibud. They remove one's lien on an item. There are three things. What are those three things? Hekdesh, being makdish the item. Chamed on Pesach, and shichur and setting an eved free, freeing an eved. They ruin the they ruin the shibud. So let's go through each one of them. Hekdesh says Rashi does shitato b'chol shas. This is only hekdesh a goof. If you makdish the hekdesh aguf, then it removes the shibud from the eved. Tosfos brings down a random time in other places. Zohar says that even by hekdesh domim, it also will work. Doesn't quote it over here. That's one thing. Number two is Tosfos says that it's lav dafka hekdesh. It's anything that's osur, any isur will be makia, like in terms of konamot. Neder, things that will make it otherwise asur. So since the isur has the ability to be chal at that moment, therefore you can be mafkia the shibud. So because of that, right, it also has the ability. That's why chametz works, that's why shechur works, all these things work, because right now she has the ability to exercise that right, and since she has the ability to exercise that right, it will be mafia the shibud in the future. So now, if we go through that, hekdesh, chametz. Chametz is in a case where, for instance, the case is that you lent money to a guy. A goy lent you money, and you gave him as collateral chametz. So now the goy really has the shibud on his chametz. Pesach comes, and if Pesach comes, the chametz belongs to whom? The chametz really belongs to you, because the goy only has a shibud on it. Since he only has a shibud on it, and the chametz is by you, it becomes your chametz. As your chametz, it then becomes asur b'ana, and the chametz, and now you can't use that. The chametz becomes asur b'ana, and it's a problem of chametz shavar lav ha-pesach. Because the chametz, the Yisro chametz, comes and is mafkia the shibud over here. Right now, and the last case of shechur is the case of Evid, where you meshechur the Evid. If you meshechur the Evid, it ruins the shibud. So what does the husband have over here on the Evid? He really has a shibud. He has a shibud, the leasehold for the payroll. He has a shibud on the Evid, and even by Takanas Lusha, his rights to the Evid in Takanas Lusha are only really a shibud. If she predeceases and ends up without, then he has a shibud to buy it back. Shibud, shechur ruins. Shechur can take out of that. That's what happened. She punched out the tooth of the ayin. That causes the Evid to go free. That freedom, right, that knocked out his shibud. That knocked out his Takanas Lusha, because his Takanas Lusha is really a shibud that allows him to collect in the instance where she sells him out. If she sells him out to another party, then he can go back and take it back. That's the Takanas Lusha. But over here, she's not selling him out, she's freeing him. If she frees him, the shibud disappears. So because of that, right, there is no shibud over here. Doesn't hold the brother. Doesn't hold the brother. And then Shechur won't be mafia de shibud, and he can go back and take it back from the Takanas Lusha. And therefore, that's why she doesn't have the right to, he doesn't go free because of her, because she doesn't have enough ownership. Right, the question of ownership here has to do with when she freezes, does she actually clear out the shibud? Maybe that when you sell a house, you can only sell a house, right, if it's free and clear, if all means are removed from the house. So if she can be mishakar him and the shibud still exists, then she's not really mishakar him because there's still a lien of the husband over here, and then she can't sell the house, she can't free him. But then if she frees him and that wipes out the shibud, then she really does have the ability to sell out the avet because the shibud will disappear and she will make him free and clear. Basically, and because of that, she has the right today to free him, and right today free him, but if she hits his iron or his chain, he'll go free. And, alright, we'll stop over here.